On November 22nd, 1994, my first wife, Gladys, died of cancer. Now, technically, Gladys was my ex-wife. We'd been divorced for 4 years when she was diagnosed with lung cancer and lymphoma. She noticed there was a lump in her neck on Easter Sunday of 1994, and she died 7 months later, a few days before Thanksgiving. She was 42. Our kids, Jenna and Andy, were 8 and 7. The next few days were among the most intense I'd ever known. I'd been aware for at least a couple of months that this day was coming, that after 4 years of shared custody, Andy and Jenna would now become my responsibility. Well, not just mine. By then, I'd met Susan, and we had just recently moved in together, taking over a small house in Petaluma. And then Gladys got sick. In everyone's life, there are certain moments, certain memories that become fuzzy and unclear when we look back on them, and certain other memories that remain crystal clear, never losing their original sharpness. I still remember the morning that I received that phone call from Gladys's sister, telling me that Gladys had passed away earlier that morning. I knew that in just a few moments, I would need to pass that information to Andy and Jenna, who I could... That's why I have water. Who I could see playing on the floor of the room where I could see that from the where I was standing in the kitchen, the phone still in my hand. Telling my kids that their mom... This is going to be a fun one to get through. Telling my kids that their mom had just died is probably the hardest thing that I have ever done. But there would be other hard tasks over the next few weeks, and there would be moments of unexpected beauty and power, of deep sadness and deep laughter. Of all those big and little moments, all the amazing stories that I experienced over those next few days, one stands out for me, strong and fragile at the same time. Let's see if I can share this. It was the day of the funeral. As the ex-husband, there was a bit of uncertainty about what my role would be in the proceedings. So for the most part, I made it my job to be with the kids. Once at the church, standing with the family as we waited for the hearse to arrive with Gladys's coffin, her mother, Elsa, approached me to ask if I would like to be one of the pallbearers. Of course, as Andy stood watching, I told Elsa I'd be honored to be a pallbearer. A few moments later, the hearse arrived, and the funeral director gave us a few directions about the technical side of lifting the coffin out of the hearse and what the process would be as we carried it up the steps and into the church. A few moments later, I stood alongside my former brothers-in-law and some family friends, our hands all resting uneasily on the handles of the coffin. I saw Andy standing to the side, a look of deep sadness on his face as he watched the pallbearers prepare to carry his mother inside for her funeral. He took a few tentative steps toward us, and we all turned to look at him. "You okay, sweetie?" I asked. "Yeah," he said shyly, but what? "It's okay, tell me." "But," he said, "I kind of wanted to be a polar bear too." And just like that, 6 grown men all burst into tears. Men who'd been doing a heroic job of remaining stoic until then. Andy was immediately invited to join us, of course. This little kid somehow smiling through his own tears, his own unimaginable sense of loss, to join in the mysterious ritual of being a polar bear. Now, out of one of the worst moments of my life came one of my favorite stories, a story I have since told over and over. Till yesterday, though, as I put the final touches on this morning's message, I had never written that story down. And till this moment, I have not shared it with more than a few people at a time. And I have to tell you, after 18 years of relating this delicate little detail of that day, though it's never lost its power to move the people I share it with, I actually rarely find myself tearing up anymore as I tell it. Repetition is a pathway to perspective, but it brings with it a sense of distance, so rarely do I cry when I tell this story. But as my fingers moved over the keyboard yesterday, my mind choosing which words to use as I finally put the polar bear story into words on the screen, something happened. The act of writing it down did that mysterious thing that writing a true story often does. It freed the memory from the frozen in time feeling that memories sometimes build around themselves. And suddenly, I was remembering details I'd long forgotten. The quality of the light that morning, the bite of the November cold, the looks on the faces of my fellow polar bears, and the deep and distinct mix of grief, love, and wonder that I felt for my child as he somehow transformed a moment of pain into a moment of magic. So yeah, I cried yesterday as I wrote it all down, reliving that moment again in a way that is unique to the creative process, reliving it in a way that only happens when we pull a story out of the vault of our memory and refashion it into that living, breathing, uniquely human art form we call story. It's a remarkable kind of alchemy, isn't it? My tears were the evidence that something significant was taking place, like the sparks that shoot from Harry Potter's magic wand when he uses his powers of magic. Tears are an emotional release, but also one more sign that something transformational is happening. And that power of transformation can be extraordinary. As a memory becomes a shared story, as that story becomes a written page or a song or a poem or a play, as that poem or play or song is then shared again in its new form with human beings who then bring their own emotions and memories and responses and transformations. All of that is why story is one of the most powerful forms of magic that we have at our disposal. How does it work? Why does it work? I'll let you know when I found out, when I figure it out. But as a professional journalist, a teller of true stories, I have seen the transformational power of story up close over and over and over. I've seen the faces of people I am interviewing for one of my newspaper or magazine articles, and I've often been struck by the obvious fact that in telling our stories, we discover ourselves. We reconnect with past feelings, we see ourselves in a new light, and we bask in the spotlight of being seen and heard by others. Some of us, of course, are more comfortable in the spotlight than others. We find ways to tell those stories that fit our gifts and talents. Doug writes and sings songs. Reverend Chris writes sermons. Our worship associates write reflections. I write magazine articles. And sometimes I write plays. I've now performed my one-man show, Wretch Like Me, to thousands of people all over Northern California. My last two plays have been decidedly autobiographical. With Wretch Like Me, I'm going to tell you a little bit more about that in a moment, but I want to share something about my most recent play, Pinky, which is a fictionalized version of what happened when, as a teenager, I fell in love with a girl named Pinky, who had standards so high I could never hope to meet them. And yet, I tried, taking my pursuit of Pinky to increasingly outrageous extremes. Though I long ago came to terms with that piece of my young adulthood, turning those memories into a play was a wonderful and life-affirming experience, allowing me to share another wonderful story my life has given me. Though making fun of myself and celebrating the tragic comic exuberance of my youth was the way that I chose to tell that story. In the case of Pinky, of course, I also had the opportunity to play myself on stage and to appear on stage opposite Pinky herself, played by a local actress, Liz Jarrett. Now talk about useful therapy. Replaying and reinventing those stories for the entertainment of others allowed me to discover amazing new things about who I was and how, for good or bad, I became the man I am. Obviously, the show meant something to others too, as word of mouth was so incredibly positive when I staged the show in Sebastopol last March that it started playing to sold-out houses. People who wanted to talk to me afterwards and tell me their own stories of first love. I'm proud to reveal that I get to do Pinky again at the end of this month. And Liz and I are once again going to be restaging the show here in Santa Rosa at the 6th Street Playhouse. When asked what compelled me to write that story, especially because it put me at risk of looking a little foolish, my response is simple. It's a good story. My life gave me that story. It would be a shame to waste it. Maya Angelou once said, "There is no greater agony than bearing an untold story inside you." That is so true. An untold story has just as much power as a told story. But it is in letting those stories out that we exercise a bit of control over them. It's like they're down there informing our reactions to other people, to all the events in our lives, and only in telling them out loud or in print do we see them clearly enough to understand their power. Perhaps that's because until we let them out, our stories aren't fully finished. They continue on and on, doing their own thing down deep inside us, controlling us in ways that we don't even recognize. I talked about how tears can sometimes be a sign that something transformational is happening. In 1998, I was asked to write an article for the Sonoma County Independent, which became the Bohemian. It's one of the newspapers I write for. I was asked to write about my experiences as a former born-again Christian in a super fundamentalist church in Southern California. Specifically, I was asked to return to that church to speak with the ministers and other people who had such a profound impact on my teenage life and to write about that experience. Now, I told some of those stories of my life as a teenage fundamentalist, but I had never written it down, carrying those stories inside me, telling it only in spoken word, which, though real, those spoken words still allow a story to retain a feeling of impermanence, a kind of gelatinous unfinishedness. Telling it is a step, but writing it, whether we write it well or not, does something amazing. I remember sitting at my desk, getting ready to begin organizing my notes and interviews into my article, and I began writing the headline. "Confessions of a Backslidden Christian," I wrote, and then I added the sub-headline, "A Prodigal Son Returns to the Fundamentalist Church Where His Faith in Jesus Began and Ended." As I wrote those last two words, "and ended," a huge wave of emotion began to rush through me, tears and then sobs building and building as that little word "ended" somehow did what I had never been able to do with that part of my life. The painful experience I'd carried with me for 15 years, that little word ended it. The solidness of seeing that word in print, in description of my childhood faith, was finally enough to give me the closure that I had never until that moment experienced. Finally, that chapter of my life felt over. And all it took was a word on a page. Not that I never needed to tell those stories again. My solo show, Wretch Like Me, which I mentioned earlier, was built from those stories. By turning them into a stage show, it allowed me to share those experiences with an entirely different group of people. And this leads me to the most powerful part of the transformational process of story. In addition to finding healing and humor and laughter and light in the stories we tell, there's an even better reason for letting them out into the open. Our stories can heal other people too. Performing Wretch Like Me was an invitation for others to share their stories with me, just like Pinky has become. And I take that opportunity as a privilege. Even before doing the solo show, I'd had a taste of this. After publishing that article about my loss of faith, especially after it was posted to the internet, I began hearing from people. Every email told a different story, but they all carried a similar theme. Each writer was essentially telling me, "Until I read your story, I thought I was all alone." See, as humans, we have this strange assumption that we are all unique. We are all unique, of course, in a way, but that doesn't mean that any of us have feelings that no one has ever had before. And yet, in moments of grief and pain, confusion or emotion, some mechanism kicks in that makes us think we are wounded in ways no one could ever understand, that no one else has ever experienced. And when we hear a story that reminds us of ourselves, it's like invisible chains are somehow lifted. In the reading that Susan did, telling the story of the young widow who found comfort in reading about other young women who'd lost their husbands, we see this again. Not only was the writer of that piece comforted by hearing the stories of others, she understood that when she was ready, her own story would be of use to women just like her. That it would share the truth that she herself needed to hear, that you are not alone. Just this last Thursday, I received an email from a woman who read my fundamentalism story when it was first published, at a time when she was attending the same denomination of church that I was in. At the time, she said, she dismissed it. She dismissed my view of my experience, but then she began to have doubts of her own years later. And the same things I described began to happen to her. Same things I described in my story began to happen to her. As those around her started heaping judgment and blame and guilt on her for daring to have doubts, for daring to ask questions. She went searching for my article, found it online, and she told me she found a certain amount of comfort in it that convinced her that she was not, as her church was telling her, she was not broken or mentally ill, as she was accused of being, or about to lose everything, soon to end up all alone in an unloving world. In her email, she wrote to me, "Thank you for what you wrote. It saved me. I hope it can help other people trapped in fundamentalism, and I hope I can someday help people too." This is the ultimate power and magic of sharing our stories. In short, when we tell our stories, in whatever way we can, we really do help to build a better world. Even if you never share the poem you've written or the secret diary you keep, in telling your story, even to yourself, you become a stronger, more self-aware person. If you have a story, you owe it to yourself to tell it any way, anywhere you can. As for me, I'm certainly not done telling stories. My life has given me countless stories, and I think it would be rude not to use them. Though I am now writing a play based purely on fiction, I've already decided that my next play will be another one-man show. In it, I'm going to expand on the experiences I described at the beginning of this message. It'll be a story of grief and death and fatherhood, a story of magic and love and childhood resilience. It's still a couple of years off, though. All I have right now is a title. I'm going to call the play Polar Bears. I can't wait to see what transformations take place when I begin to write that. Doug.
Today too, that I want to tell you. In the year 2002, I decided I should write a song about my dad.